Good evening, and thank you for joining us. I'm Jennifer Gilbert from Fox 45 News, and I will be your moderator this evening. We have two candidates for governor debating this evening, Attorney General Doug Gansler and State Delegate Heather Mazier. You will also notice there is an empty lectern on the stage. We invited Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown to be a part of this debate tonight. In fact, we negotiated with his campaign for several months to secure his appearance here this evening. But ultimately, the Lieutenant Governor chose not to be a part of the only Baltimore-produced televised debate. We believe that this debate will be a key part of helping voters to decide when they go to the voting booth on June 24th, don't miss the date, for the primary. We believe this is an important night, and an important night for Baltimore voters. And we appreciate Attorney General Gansler and State Delegate Mazier for being here and for your willingness to share your visions for the state with the people of the greater Baltimore area. So thank you. We're going to begin by going over the rules for the evening. Each candidate will have 60 seconds to respond to my questions. In addition, they will each have the opportunity to do three rebuttals or three challenges, and those will each last for 30 seconds. We've also taken questions from the public tonight, from Twitter and from Facebook, and I will be asking those questions throughout the hour-long program. You can also, of course, comment about the debate on Twitter. We are using the hashtag tonight, Your Voice, Your Future. You can see we also have a studio audience. These are guests invited by the Gansler and Mazier campaigns. We thank you for being with us, but we ask that you remain silent throughout the program, with the exception of right now, as we welcome our two candidates for the evening. And thanks to both of you for being here. Thanks for coming to the great city of Baltimore. It is a great city. We know it's a great city, but all too often we find ourselves the brunt of some really ugly jokes on the national stage because of the terrible problems and the challenges that we do have here. Just last week, Stephen Colbert referred to us as an uninhabitable wasteland, and we hate to hear that, obviously. We also know that in recent years, much of the political clout in Maryland has really shifted more toward the D.C. suburbs. Both of you come to us from Montgomery County, and we know that a lot of people here in Baltimore want to know, what will you do for Baltimore? And Delegate Mazier, you won the coin toss. We'll begin with you.
Thank you so much for the question, Jennifer, and thank you to the audience that's joining us this evening. It's a really critical question about what we need to do to help Baltimore City moving forward. Here are some of my ideas. I was instrumental in engaging with advocates to get the first $1 billion of school construction funding in Baltimore City, and I have a plan to make sure that phase two funding comes forward. The only way we're going to encourage 50,000 more families to move to Baltimore City is by revitalizing our neighborhoods, and our schools are the anchors of these neighborhoods. I want to make sure that we have a 21st century classroom for all of our children. We're going to continue investing in the Port of Baltimore. Do you know that $1.7 billion of economic activity is generated from the Port of Baltimore every year? That's five times the amount of money that any city earns from hosting a Super Bowl. We're going to not just raise the minimum wage, but have a living wage, and I have a plan to provide middle-class tax cuts that Baltimore is desperately seeking.
Thank you, Delegate Mazier. Attorney General Gansler, what will you do for Baltimore?
Well, thank you. I work in Baltimore every day. I've been coming to Baltimore since I was a Birds fan as a young boy when Brooks Robinson, Frank Robinson, and Boog Powell were playing. And I love this city. This city has an amazing amount of potential, though it needs jobs. 46% of the adults in Baltimore City are unemployed. We have the second highest and worst minority achievement gap in the country, and it's felt nowhere more strongly than right here in Baltimore. We have a rampant crime problem with over 250 to 300 people murdered every year, now going on well over a decade. So there's a lot to do, and I'm somebody that gets things done. I've been in public service for 22 years. I'm seeing problems, seeing things that are unfair, seeing things that need to be fixed, working relentlessly to get things done. I'll give an example in Baltimore. I still play lacrosse. I coach both my sons in lacrosse. I've been coaching for 30 years. I noticed that Baltimore City had no opportunity for lacrosse in the city. So 6 years ago, I started a program called Charm City Youth Lacrosse. We now have over 400 boys and girls playing every Saturday morning in Carroll Park. I go every Saturday. I bring my children, and it's been a huge success mentoring these children and making them part of the fabric of Baltimore City.
Thank you, Attorney General. We know that a recent Gallup poll said that 47% of people in Maryland say they'd like to leave the state. Another Gallup poll shows that 67% believe that taxes are too high. Attorney General Gansler, what will you do about taxes, and what will you do to make sure that people don't vote with their feet and move elsewhere?
And it's really sad because, look, I grew up in Maryland. I'm the only candidate that did. It's such a great state, and they've increased taxes under Lieutenant Governor Brown and the O'Malley administration over 40 straight times. We've had tax increases. They want to balance the economic future of our state on the back of more taxes and casino gambling. We've lost over 8,000 small businesses in the last 8 years. We have 67% more people unemployed than there were 8 years ago. We have four Fortune 500 companies left in Maryland. You know, people get it. We're 49th in personal income growth in the state. So we have a real problem in terms of our taxes, and we have to be competitive with our neighboring states. One of the things I called for is a reduction of the corporate tax. It's 8.25. Virginia's a 6. West Virginia's 6.5. We need to continue to, by a quarter of a point each year, reduce our corporate tax so we can bring hundreds of millions of dollars back into the tax base of Maryland by bringing more businesses back here and fewer businesses leaving here.
And before I have Delegate Mazur respond, I just want to ask you, Attorney General, because I know the Lieutenant Governor has gone back and forth with you on this. What is the cost of reducing that corporate tax rate?
Yeah, the Lieutenant Governor's been nice enough to send two very nasty negative advertisements to everybody that's going to vote in Maryland and using the number that's going to cost $1.6 billion to reduce the tax number. Well, look, 6% of something is a lot more than 8.25% of nothing. And the problem is we have to be recognized that we're losing all our companies. President Obama, Chris Van Hollen, Steny Hoyer, all of them have called for reduction of the corporate tax because people are going to walk with their feet, as you said. Look, if somebody's looking to have a company here and the tax rate is 8.25% and they can go to Northern Virginia at 6, they're going to pick 6 every time. And that's jobs, and that's increasing our tax base, and that's putting people back to work.
Delegate Mazur, what will you do about taxes, and what will you do to encourage people to stay in the state?
There's a defining difference in this election on tax policy. I'm not someone that is pushing for corporate tax cuts. I'm going to be the governor for middle-class families. If we bring back the millionaire's tax, which was allowed to expire in this current administration, we would have enough revenue to give 90% of all Maryland families tax relief that they need. That's money that gets reinvested in our economy. We buy more shoes and school supplies for our children. We go out to dinner more often. But I also am investing meaningful tax relief in our small businesses. They're the job creators and the backbones of our economy. By closing one corporate tax loophole that allows a handful of multi-state corporations that avoid paying their taxes here in Maryland, asking them to pay their fair share, we could give $200 million of small business tax relief. I want to see thriving small businesses just like 36th Street in Hamden and here in Baltimore, all across this state, and we will do it by giving small businesses tax cuts and middle-class families tax relief to shop in those businesses.
Delegate Mazur, the point was brought up earlier about the number of Fortune 500 companies in this state, and with the acquisition of Constellation Energy, Baltimore became the largest city in the nation without a Fortune 500 company. Some governors in other states have taken very active roles, almost PR campaigns, to try to draw businesses into the state. Is that a role that you would take on? And how would you sweeten the deal here in Maryland when Maryland does have a reputation of having taxes that are too high and too many regulations that make it not business friendly?
Jennifer, let's set the record straight on the corporate tax policy. Maryland has the second lowest corporate tax rate in the region, but I would agree that we can do a lot more to help businesses understand how to operate with certainty by getting our regulations under control. Let me give you one example. 3 years ago, I wanted to figure out how we could do more composting in our state, but large industrial composting facilities wouldn't operate here because we had three agencies with three different sets of rules and regulations on how they should operate. I worked with that private sector industry advocates and those agency officials to rewrite the law so that there was one set of rules, one streamlined regulation that said Maryland's open for business. And as a result, an independent report came out saying that 1,400 new green economy jobs are on their way to Maryland because of that regulatory policy that we changed. I will bring that kind of dedication to every regulatory policy in Maryland to help us grow more jobs and let businesses know we're open for business here in Maryland under a Mazur Coates administration.
Attorney General Gansler, I'll let you respond to the question of, would you take that active role of going out and seeking businesses to come here, as some other governors have done?
Yeah, I think it's the most important and defining part of this campaign, that we're for jobs. I believe the middle class is getting squeezed, and I believe that the reason why it's important that we have Fortune 500 companies here in Baltimore and in Maryland is because people in Druid Hill and Reservoir Hill and Shipley Hill and Cherry Hill all need to have a place to work. And if we don't have these companies coming back here, if they continue to leave, we just learned McCormick's thinking about leaving our state. And each week or each month, we hear about another company leaving the state. And that means we have an increasing tax base that we keep taxing more. And so that's a big problem for us. Yes, we need to be active. And that starts at the top. First, you have to recognize there's a problem. And so what we need to do is things like New York. We've now fallen to 46th in the country in manufacturing. New York has said, look, we'll give you tax credits if you're going to bring your manufacturing plant to our state and give hundreds of jobs to people. We need to do that in Maryland, and we need to have a real competitive nature with the other states that are around us.
Our next question comes to us from Laura on Twitter, and she asked the question, how will you secure the weak Maryland pension fund from further raids to balance the state budget? Attorney General Gansler?
Well, I'm glad it wasn't Laura, my wife, because she's sitting here, so I know that wasn't her doing that. But listen, I think we have to protect our pensions. You know, they make promises. The Brown O'Malley administration has made promises. They said they were going to protect $300 million. They tried to get down to $100 million and settled on $200 million. That's taking money from the people of Maryland. And we have to have dedicated funds. Look at all the money we're making in casino gambling that was supposed to go to expanding pre-K from half day to full day. I was the first candidate running for governor by 6 months to say we need to expand pre-K around the state to every child, have a voluntary pre-K for all children throughout the state. Though I did say we need to start with people 300% above the poverty line below to address this egregious minority achievement gap, which is the moral stain of our state. But we need to protect the pensions. We need to protect the Transportation Trust Fund. What they did was they said, you know, we're going to raid all the money from the Transportation Trust Fund, and now we're going to have another regressive tax and have a gas tax. We need to protect the money of the people of Maryland.
Delegate Mazur, what would you do about the pension fund situation?
Laura, thank you so much for posing that question to us. It's a really important one because we've seen pensions get raided too often in Annapolis. First, it was our teachers. We shifted the pension obligation from the state to the counties for our teachers. I fought against that. I voted against that plan because it was not only bad for our educators, it was bad for our first responders, our police officers, and our firefighters in counties where that money was going to get shifted and a new obligation on them. This last legislative session, I fought against and voted against the nearly $300 million pension cut from our state employees. This was done right after we asked our employees, state employees, just 2 years ago to pay more into their pensions so that we would have a pension fund that was fully funded. And we raided that extra money to close budget gaps. Promises made need to be promises kept on pensions. I know this at a very personal level. My father was a United Auto worker for 32 years, and after he retired, his pension was also raided by his company, and it has had a hard time making ends meet. I will be the governor that fights to protect your pensions. We won't go for cheap and easy tricks for balancing the budget under a Mazur administration.
We want to switch topics now to the topic of crime. Just this past weekend in Baltimore, we saw 6 shootings, 3 of them fatal. Baltimore, the 7th most violent city in the country. Delegate Mazur, as governor, what would you do to make Baltimore safer?
First of all, my heart goes out to everyone in the city who has been ravaged by these crimes. We saw 540 shootings in Baltimore last year. That's 1.5 a day. Maryland ranks as the 9th most violent state in the nation. We have to change this. No mother should be worried about sending her children to a school bus stop and whether or not they're going to be shot, or being able to shop in a mall or go to a movie theater. We have to reject that this is the new normal. I have a plan to make sure that Maryland becomes the 7th state that does truly universal background checks on all firearms. I want us to remove firearms from the scenes of domestic violence disturbances because women are 5 times more likely to be killed when their abuser has a firearm in the home. And we know that gun buyback programs work really well at getting those extra guns off the streets and out of the hands of violent criminals. But we haven't invested enough money to make those programs exist all across the state. And my plan for criminal justice reform does that.
Attorney General Gansler.
I've been a prosecutor for the last 22 years. I was an assistant United States attorney in the Clinton administration. I was the state's attorney in Montgomery County. I've been your attorney general for the last 8 years fighting crime. We don't need plans. We can get this done. There are so many things we need to do. We need to. I pushed and got the first gang statute in the state of Maryland. We need to actually expand that to have a statewide RICO statute so we can get the gangs off the streets in Baltimore City. There are three types of people you don't want to have guns in their hands: people with convicted felons, domestic violence issues, and mental health issues. I put the first domestic violence dockets in place in Montgomery County, then the second. And then I passed laws as head of the Family Violence Council to make sure we took guns out of the hands of domestic violence abusers. I think we ought to have the same law that we have in federal system and the state system, which is a 5-year mandatory minimum for any convicted felon who's walking around the streets with a gun. I prosecuted the Georgian diplomat that killed the girl in DuPont Circle. I prosecuted the snipers. I went to the Supreme Court of the United States myself and argued in front of them to keep a sex offender in jail. I'm looking forward to protecting the state of Maryland as your governor.
Delegate Mazir, I know that you have advocated for the legalization of marijuana. We know that we will have decriminalization of marijuana in this state. So whether it is full-on legalization or decriminalization, what does that message send to our kids? And how does it complicate the already complicated discussions that we have with our children as we try to set boundaries about what's right, what's wrong, what's okay, and what isn't? Attorney General Gansler, we'll begin with you.
Well, I'm for medical marijuana. I think if a real doctor is going to prescribe, thinks that someone should be prescribed marijuana because it'll help them in hospice or what have you, I think that's important to do as long as we have it administered by real doctors. Decriminalization was the next step, and I don't have a problem with that because the reality was that the amount of marijuana that we're talking about, of possession, people really don't go to jail, certainly not when I'm prosecutor in Montgomery County, they wouldn't. So the issue is whether we want to go to legalization. I'm against going to legalization at this point. I think we may get there someday, but I think we need to let other states experiment with it first, literally and figuratively, because I think that there's a lot of wrinkles to this. I mean, when Colorado put medical marijuana in, for example, something over 90% of the people that had prescription for arthritis were under 26 years old. I mean, we need to make sure that it's put in appropriately and the right way, not because of taxes. We just can't tax our way out of this. It has to be done hand in hand with public health officials and public safety officials. We may get there, but let's make sure if we do, we do it the right way.
Delegate Mazir, why do you believe now is the time to move ahead with full legalization?
Our war on drugs has been a failure. Our marijuana prohibition laws are not working. They've been enforced with racial bias. African Americans and whites use marijuana at the exact same frequency, but African Americans go to jail 3 times more often. It detracts our law enforcement from focusing on more violent and serious crimes. And when we legalize, tax, and regulate marijuana, we take an underground economy and we bring it to the light of day, increasing our opportunity to keep it out of the hands of young people, because drug dealers aren't carding anyone for an ID. The state can do a better job of making sure that it's only adults who have access to this. And for adults, we know that if they're choosing to use this in the privacy of their own home, it should be treated no different than alcohol or tobacco, because it's the similar toxicity and it's no more toxic and no more addictive than those two substances, and we should treat it the same. And when we do this, we can generate as much as $160 million of new revenue that I dedicate towards universal pre-K, where we'll finally get to eliminating the achievement gap in our schools. And if I could just use 30 more seconds to address the fact that I don't think we should be waiting. Waiting is what happens when you're not showing leadership. Showing leadership is to say, this is smart policy. We've done our homework. We've done our due diligence. We've read all the reports, and we know that this is the best policy for Maryland. That's why the Mazir Coates administration is putting this forward, and that's why almost 60% of Maryland families support legalization in Maryland as well.
We have 33,000 people in our prison cells, in our jail cells. We have more than 143,000 people in the system altogether. We spend close to $1 billion a year on the system. If you were elected governor, what would you do to reform our criminal justice and incarceration system? And would you look at commuting the mandatory minimum sentence of nonviolent drug offenders? Delegate Nazir.
Thank you so much for the really, really important question. I believe that for too long we have had an approach in this state that is focused on mass incarceration. We have this cradle-to-prison pipeline that I fought against when I opposed the youth jail being built here in Baltimore. We know that when we build it, we'll fill it. And we have to stop just being tough on crime. We have to start being smart on crime. My strategies are focused on early intervention and engagement with our youth. Stronger sentencing and risk release systems, and focusing on rehabilitation and reentry within the criminal justice system, and connecting people to jobs and housing when they get out so that the recidivism and the revolving door stops turning. We can do this in Maryland with a different approach. And yes, in my criminal justice platform, I've proposed eliminating mandatory minimum sentences across the board.